Drop a line and catch some fresh fish. It's more of Go Fish with Mike Buck. Brought to you by POP Fishing and Marine at Pier 38 in Honolulu's Fishing Village. Right here on AM 690 KHNR.
Yeah, so sometimes it kind of feels like you're doing a chicken dance, I know. Anyway, it's like I was telling you, welcome back to our final segment today. As you know, the program is brought to you in part by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council. We try to bring you up to speed on what they need to do their job. And also to share you exactly what this council does. First of all, it's the largest of the fishing councils in the country. And it encompasses a huge piece of real estate here in the Pacific besides the main Hawaiian Islands groups. And to that end, we can be a very big service and value from time to time. And we can also be a problem from time to time. So, you know, you've heard the old thing when you're a kid, garbage in, garbage out on statistics and reports and surveys and everything. We're going to talk about that a little bit today with the social scientist of the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council. He's been with us before. We welcome Chris Hawkins back. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Mike. Good to be with you again.
We have stressed for a long time the importance of fessing up on stuff. And, you know, when it comes time to catch limits, if fishermen don't tell the powers that be how much they're catching, they're likely to get disappointed, and they're going to be told that their quota is far beneath what, you know, they're usually catching. Let's talk a little bit. When you talk about being the social scientist, we live in a kind of a controversial world, and I do know that a lot of what you do is sensitive stuff. I think what I'm trying to get at is we've been able to explain in the last several months here on the program that the council is a bottoms-up organization. In other words, the information that you need is the core of what you guys do at the other end. So let's talk about how refined and what sort of stuff you need and what this whole talking about is with learning about surveying who we are, where we are, what we're catching, what we're doing.
Yeah. So, you know, for a long time, the law has required that the councils and the fishery service include the perspectives of the folks who rely on the resource, mm-hmm. on the fishery resource, and include the extent to which they rely on it economically, socially, culturally, traditionally. And obviously, a lot of those things are interconnected. Mm-hmm. So there's a big ball of wax there. And I would say for a long time, even though the law has required us to bring that information into the fold and to use it to analyze alternatives to get the job done, the councils in general and the fishery service in general hasn't done the best job mm-hmm. in terms of the social sciences, even though, again, we're required to do it. And so,
well, we've learned a little bit at the Fishers Forums.
Yes.
Because people come to these forums and they voice their concerns, which is what they're for. And I think that when I first started getting involved in them a couple of years back, they were nowhere near as give and take as they are now. It seems to me like people are starting to get it. Hey, these guys aren't out to get us. They're out to help us, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, on the Fishers Forums and some of the other venues, the scoping meetings and things, mm-hmm. even the council meetings themselves are good mm-hmm. opportunities for the public to provide that input and their perspectives and some of their passion for this. But a lot of what we talk about when we talk about social science is a more systematic, structured, even random representative approach to getting that input so that we aren't relying on just a few folks and their perspectives and bringing that into the decision-making. Yeah. We're relying on more than that. And so that's where the science really does come in and the surveying that we do.
That's what we want to do to help maybe enhance the ability to get the information that you require. Because I'm guessing that really anecdotal or factual information from the fishery is more important than a scientist's opinion, because your opinion is based on the information you can gather, right? It's like the cart before the horse thing and vice versa.
Yeah, and so what we're trying to do is take that anecdotal information and make it get more scientifically collected. And so, one or two people, that's easy to dismiss. And it's easy to say, well, you didn't talk to the right one or two people. If you talk to 100 people or 1,000 people, you would get probably a better picture of what's going on, and you could subgroup people and things like that. And so that's what we're really trying to do when we're talking about surveying fishermen, is we're not trying to manage the resource based on people's opinions and beliefs. We're trying to bring that information in a systematic and structured way in alongside the biological and the ecological information that we have to make a well-rounded decision.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest thing that I get as a social scientist. You can't manage a resource by opinion. That's not what we're trying to do.
And what's interesting about this is it just may be that the events of today and in the last year or so have called out the need to really button some of this stuff up and make some decisions. We're having a lot of people from one island to another that are arguing about the fishery, who's taking what from where. And now I think that it has become clear that there are certain areas that really have the right to be contentious because their source of food's being affected. And there's nothing more near to us than breathing the air and drinking the water and eating the food.
We spent a lot of time talking about Hawaii here in Hawaii, obviously. But, you know, as you mentioned earlier, our region includes places like American Samoa, where the folks have been on their land and using their waters for maybe 3,000 years.
Right,
and so we do have to remember that. Here in Hawaii, it goes back maybe 1,000 years. That's not an insignificant amount of time, and the people have a right to be passionate and to be involved in this. And it is their resource that we are managing on their behalf. So we want their opinion, and we want their input.
What about this? This is really cool. I've noticed, and I've talked to a lot of you guys, as you know, and we've spoken before. It seems like what might have seemed like kind of helter-skelter or willy-nilly back in the day was pretty structured. It was kind of like a ballet. There were people that knew when to take what species, when to take what size, who can take it, what areas shouldn't be. And all of this information, which we assumed was lost and far gone, we're finding that some of it's available.
And I think even more interesting and important is that we know that those old techniques work to manage a resource.
Because people lived, they may have been in
an era where there's fewer people and things like that. Maybe not. I mean, there's some evidence that there was a lot of people here on this island back in the day. What we've got to do a better job, I think, is bring it into the modern management fold rather than just giving the lip service that the traditional ecological knowledge is important. How do we create a management process where we, in a structured, formal way, bring that information into consideration? And that's where the council is working for the next 5 years is a process thing.
You know what I'm interested in? I can remember it a couple of fishers forums ago, maybe a couple of years back. And I remember when I was fishing part-time commercially that we had these catch reports we had to fill out every month. And it was this big old book. And in between each page, you had to put a piece of carbon paper, okay? Mm-hmm. Carbon paper. You know what that is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm thinking that nowadays, all of these things are being able to be done electronically. You can go and file your report online. And in a lot of cases, it's the children and actually grandchildren of some of the fishermen that are doing this. But I think that what my audience would be keenly interested in is the way technology is really structuring and helping you guys do what needs to be done.
You know, that's a really great question, because there are a number of opportunities now that technology is providing fishermen to make it much easier for them to report. In other parts of the country, there have been these apps that have been developed for your phone or your tablet. So you're out fishing.
Oh, yeah.
So
you're
a charter fisherman. You're out fishing. Mm-hmm. And you catch a marlin. Well, the app might have a series of pictures, and one of them might be a marlin. So you click on that, and then it just asks you for the approximate size. And from that, it'll populate the weight. And then you can hit upload, and it uploads through the cloud into your catch report thing online. And then when you get back to the dock, even before you get back to the dock, you can hit submit. Yeah. Or at the end of the month, you submit the whole thing. It's already populated in the system, and you submit it to the state, whatever state you live in.
Yeah.
That's the sort of thing that I think are making people's lives a lot easier in terms of reporting.
Absolutely. And, you know, the other night, the last Fishers Forum a couple of weeks back, there were four different presentations on stock assessments and showing I saw people very, very skeptical in the beginning, thinking these four little young ladies that are doing their thesis on this stuff. But when they understood the technology that was at their fingertips and how important it was to digitize thoughts and reports, they were able to really make an educated guess at certain areas that was probably pretty good.
Yeah.
And all it's going to do is get better.
There are a lot of examples in the country where bringing fishermen's information that they had previously been really concerned about sharing with the state or the feds, bringing that information into the fold has resulted in additional harvest for them, because the more fish we know are coming out, the more we can say that are in there to begin with. And so there are, I think there's a sea change going on. Even here in Hawaii, I've heard more and more people recently saying that they would be not adverse to even a non-commercial fishing license. They would be not adverse to participating in more surveys to get their mana'o, you know, their opinion about things. So I think there's a dawning realization.
Interesting you say that, because I can tell you that when they first came out with that assessment, that ramp sticker, which is a little triangular decal that you had to put on your trailer to use the boat ramps. And they earmarked the funds for maintenance of the boat ramps, and it really did. And so now they're able to say, all right, you know, if you're really going to do this, I mean, everybody's been skeptical about information, sharing information, or being accountable to anybody. So there's this big concern that the catch reports are being sent to the IRS so the IRS can tell them how much money I'm making. Totally untrue.
No,
That's been covered. Now, the next thing is, and where you're going to get validation, as you mentioned this earlier, if you talk to guys that are bottom fishermen, and I'm ground fish, we call it in the surveys, but bottom fishing is what you all call it. They were pleasantly surprised that their input actually increased their quota of catch allowance, shocked everybody in it, you know, but you know, you talk about how that's quite possibly going to happen in other areas, like the green sea turtle and others down the road.
Yeah. How do we manage the resource without understanding what's being taken, how many folks are out there on the water fishing, what their interests are in terms of infrastructure and bag limits and things like that. I mean, how do you manage it absent some of the basic information that we don't have?
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll be honest with you. One of the reasons it's tougher for us is here as me as a social scientist is we don't have a frame of people to just pull from to do our surveys like other states do because they've got a fishing license.
Yeah,
we have to bother people at the beach and ask them for their name and address sometimes. And but how else are we going to do it? How else are we going to understand who you are to send you a survey and to bring you into the fold? And
those of us that have been able to be in California, in Oregon, in Washington State, in Alaska, it's so structured. And when you go there to catch salmon, you got to get the tag for that trip.
Right.
And everybody does it because you have to. And we don't do any of that here. I think we are the only state in the union that doesn't have some sort of registration for fishing.
That's correct.
You know, and there's been a tremendous pushback for all of these years. And I see finally where people are saying, well, it's not so much the money. It's so much invasion of what they consider privacy. Other people don't feel that. In other words, would you agree that you can go along, let's say a fish game guy is driving along the street in Klamath, Oregon, and he sees a guy fishing. I mean, the guy expects the ranger to come up and say, how you doing? What's in your creel? Let me see your tag. And they're happy to provide that information most of the time.
Most of the time, are happy. No, and
unless they're a poacher.
Yeah, exactly right. you might be subject to get caught. And here in Hawaii, we don't know if and when that might come to pass, that there is a non-commercial fishing license. And so, you know, what the council is really looking to do over the next year or so is to start to build our own, what we're calling a contact database.
Like a base, sure.
For fishermen. And the important thing about that contact database is to make it as representative as possible, because we know not all non-commercial fishermen are the same. Some are motivated primarily for recreation, for sport and pleasure, but some aren't. Some are motivated more for the cultural aspect of it,
have shore casting, netting, trolling? I mean, is it going to try to cover the whole fishery?
I think, you know, what we're probably going to do with the council, because we're primarily a federal waters entity, is we're going to start with your boat-based fishing.
Yeah, the
and even in that, mostly. Even in that, yeah. You've got different motivations for going fishing.
Sure.
Subsistence, sustenance, not commercial, but, you know, more on that sort of what we call recreational expense, where you might sell a few extra fish if you can to make up for gas and bait. That's not a commercial. You're not motivated for profit in there. So what we're trying to do is make our contact database as representative of as possible, so that when we go and get perspectives and attitudes and knowledge and values from people, we have a really good mix so that we can report back to the council and to others. We didn't just get one group of those
people. And I know the council, everything the council does, you assign some sort of a timeline to, and you put some sort of different stratas or different levels you want to reach. Where are we now in the studies that you're doing right now? What point are we in the information gathering part of it?
So there's different projects going on. I'll just give you an example of one. We're working as your listeners might know on taking a look at the yellowfin ahi commercial minimum size issue. And so in terms of social science, we're just sort of getting started on that. We've done some interviews with folks out in Waianae, for example, in some of those communities out in the western part here on Oahu, to try to understand the importance to some people of having those smaller ahis available in the commercial market. Because you can go catch them if you want, any size. There's no regulation against that.
Yeah, let me interrupt there because I can tell you, gang, I was the MC at the Fishers Forum that addressed this very issue. There's a great movie. Some of you have seen it already. We've played audio clips of it. Chris can get to brag on in the middle. This is the work that sort of indicates, and most of us agree, that there's more than anecdotal evidence to suggest that we have a resident local ahi population that's ours, right? That's part of it.
That I would say that's an accurate statement.
Now, the next part of it is that there was, everybody was thinking, oh, here comes a big bad council and the fisheries, and they're going to limit the size that we can take to eat. And that was not the case. What's really talking about is the size of marketable, sellable ahi is going to increase according to what the scientists give us an idea of what size they need to be so they can start reproducing, right?
Well, I would say it's going to increase. I would say that's what they're looking at. Yeah. And the state has to, you know, act, I would think, first, because the council, you need to put into complementary regulations so that we're all on the same page. And the state right now has a minimum commercial size of 3 pounds.
I got to tell you,
the feds don't have anything.
Yeah, but I got to tell you that I am much more certain now that the very fishermen that this will affect are the ones that are most in favor of this. All of the commercial guys that were at the meeting, at the council, it would affect them. But they said, you know, we need to do this. And the guy that wants to put one in the frying pan is not affected. And that's the point that they made. And that's, once we get that level of trust and bond between a fisherman and the council, we've achieved a goal.
We're still figuring some of that out. We got a petition. The state got a petition from almost 350 people demanding that the state does not do anything with the current commercial size. So there are people that really do feel that their lives are going to be impacted by a decision to raise the limit. They're willing to entertain a bit of a raise, but at some point,
maybe going from 3 to 10 in one bite,
something like that. At some point, you get out of the size that's very versatile and desirable for them, and then you're going to have pushback. I wouldn't say it's a lot of people in terms of the state, but the people that it does potentially affect are important for us to consider.
Well, let me ask you this, because as a scientist and everything, y'all have to know about emotions. I do know from the amount of political shows I do and other parts of my career that the only people that complain to a legislator, councilman, or mayor, or whatever, are those that are opposed to something, most of the time, and vehemently opposed to any kind of change. And so they'll go out and gather signatures and everything else. That may not be reflective of the population as a whole, and this is where others have got to come
in. I'm so glad you said that, because that's exactly why I feel I have a job, is that, you know, these scoping meetings that we hold, as important as they are and as legally required as they are, and these other community meetings that we hold, they do bring out folks who tend to be on polar opposites, one or the other, and we don't have that great middle. And the way you get the great middle, and you understand the great middle, is you employ social scientific approaches and survey approaches, and you go out and you purposely seek those folks out, and you get their attitudes and perspectives on these things. Public scoping meetings and other public meetings are a terrible way to understand the representative opinion of the populace and the constituents on an issue. Really, they're just not great. They're a good way to get information out. They're a good way to get some kernels back. But I would never put any of any stock in, say, or I wouldn't say that I understand the issue in a representative way from a public meeting.
Yeah, and gang, what you got to do is, if you want a corroboration on this, go to your next neighborhood board meeting. Because what you see is, you'll see people organized with T-shirts on, with petitions, and they're banging the gong for this. And then and it looks to the representative group like, gee, everybody is here against this thing. And I think that what I've learned so far in those meetings and in sort of in some of this fact-finding, that even those that are really sometimes opposed to something are not really sure why they're opposed. And when they're shown the reality or science, they start to figure, well, maybe I ought to soften my position a little bit.
And I think similarly, a lot of folks really do try to, try to manage for the average as well. Mm-hmm. And there is no average, if you think about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is no average fisherman. There is no average camper. There is no average anything when it comes to these things. You look at a boats on a lake, and you count the number of sailboats and the number of rowboats and the number of motorboats, and then you try to find the average boat, you're going to get a boat that has half an engine, half a sail, and one oar. I mean, that's
three and a third kids in every household. Right. However, that being said, because we've been so independent and so secretive with some of the things, it makes the task the scientific task even more difficult. So that's why I say timeline and why it's like, for instance, since you mentioned the ahi, the yellowfin tuna, let's talk about that for a minute, because I felt that there was enough of a time window being extended that every stakeholder is going to be able to somehow vocalize what they think, and it'll have to be considered.
If they want to.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. You can lead a horse to water.
Right.
Our job largely is to make sure that everybody understands and knows that the issue is on the table.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then to the extent that I can be unleashed to go do, you know, that science and bring it in, great. But people do have to be proactive, I think, in the management of their own resources. And they do have to come and share their... And there's plenty of ways now to do it. You know, we're on Twitter and Facebook, and we've got emails, and we've got phones, and we've got three council meetings a year. We've got a lot of ways for people to participate.
I do know that it's hard for some to let go of something or to embrace something. And I know that the amount of work that's done in educating young people with regards to things like recycling and don't smoke anymore and all of this stuff has been terrific. But now you get into a pretty personal part of a family when you start telling me that I can only use a net this big and I can only take 8 of these things. And I'm wondering if Oahu is even a harder place to deal with because we have so many newcomers and so many people that, gee, they're in Hawaii, let's go fishing. They don't understand that there's got to be some rules.
I think that's true. And I think from the data collection side, that kind of holds as well.
Mm-hmm.
You have to trust the person who's asking you to share some information with you. And, you know, from my work around the country, I found that a lot of people do not trust the federal government.
Yeah.
And so to the extent that the council is sort of conflated with the federal government, that has, I think, hurt us in trying to, you know, get people to trust us and to share their data and their information with us.
But if we go backwards and say that, in, like we said in the very beginning of the meeting today, Chris, and if you're wondering what we're doing, Chris Hawkins is a social scientist with the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council. And we're talking about a couple of things this and next week where his area of concern can really help, can really use the help that you can provide with transparency and with some of the other things. I kind of think that even... the most liberal of us with regards to being wanting to have controls or lack controls know that when you go fishing, you have to go further. Or, you know, when you go diving, the big ones aren't there anymore. It's the stock assessments and some of the other things that the council is providing is invaluable as a I don't want to say a lever, but certainly as a information. Once again, going to good stuff in, good stuff out.
Yeah, and I've been talking mostly about social science, but it's very true of biological science. Garbage in, garbage out. And a lot of these things cost a lot of money, so sometimes there are shortcuts that need to be taken, or the scientists have to do it less than ideal in the way that they would want to do it to get the best information possible. But no, it is. Yeah. If you have a poorly designed study for a stock assessment, or you have a poorly designed study for a social survey, You've got to take the results with a grain of salt.
Yeah, and that being said, whenever you have the opportunity, whether it's, and I think what you really ought to do, maybe you're sitting on the fence on all this stuff. You don't want to part with the pearls of wisdom or information that I'm asking you to give to people like Chris. But I think going to wpcouncil.org will really open some eyes. I mean, the work that's being done, and whoever's managing your website, but what a great job's been done with that. You agree?
I would, and I think you're only going to see improvements in the future as we bring more of our expertise and put it on the web. I'm really not on there yet, I will be. And so, I think it is a very good website amongst the councils, the different 8 different councils.
Let's make sure before we finish this particular get-together, Chris, that people understand the difference between the scientific part of the stock assessments that goes on in one part of the council and what you do, the social science, which is... much more, I think, down to earth and personal than some of the cold hard stats of other areas.
Yeah. So, you know, if you just step back and you think, what is science? Mm-hmm. What is the process and methodology of science? You can apply it to what I do, and you can apply it to what the biologists do.
Yep.
You know, I'm the kind of scientist, the social scientist, that's really interested in understanding a representative opinion on an issue.
Yep.
Just like the biologist, I'm understanding how generalizable that opinion is to the wider population that I'm trying to understand, just like the biological scientist. I'm really want to use a sort of hypothesis to try to confirm or disconfirm what we think about fishermen and what they're doing, just like the biophysical scientist. And so, and I want to collect data that's reliable. And what that simply means is I do the survey this year and I do it the same way next year and I get the, basically the same results.
In
that's
other
reliable
words, so
data.
That, so that what somebody is doing in a stock assessment is a hard count of how many yellowfin did we see in that spot that day. What you're doing is taking a snapshot of how many people did we see socially that are in this place that need this attention today.
Or what is their attitude towards issue X? Yeah, you know, ask it of the same sort of, the same way next year, am I going to get wildly different results? Well, then that's a problem. Yeah, and the same thing with the biological, the stock assessment. If they do a stock assessment this year and then they get wildly different results next year, was that an issue with their methods? Is that, are the fish changing? And so the same principles do apply. It's science, and we try to do it in a structured, systematic way so we believe the results that we're getting.
Sounds a lot easier than it is. I know how hard you guys work. Chris, thanks so much for joining us today. Appreciate it. We'll see you again real soon.
Great.
Okay, when we come back, first of all, we're done. We'll see you next week. But I want to remind you, and I want to thank everybody from POP Life Raft and Marine Safety for that little chit-chat about putting that sticker on all of your stuff so we don't go looking for you when you're not lost. And go to WPCouncil.org and find out what Chris and I are talking about. And if you want to hear something or see something on the program, let us know. The Mike Buck Show at AOL.com is the best way to do it. And you can also go to the council link and find out about events and all kinds of different things. Really interesting. Let the kids see it. It's so informative and so it's so easy to interact with. Okay. So for everybody at POP Fishing and Marine, Life Drafter and Marine Safety, and Nico's and the WP Council, I'm Mike Buck. See you next time on Go Fish. Have a great weekend. Aloha.